Chapter 9, Landing Approaches and Landings. This chapter discusses the factors that affect an airplane during the landing approach and the landing under normal and critical circumstances, and the pilot's techniques for positively controlling those factors. The pilot must be able to make the transition from in-flight control with accuracy, smoothness, and positiveness, so that the pilot may better understand the factors that will influence judgment and technique. The last part of the approach pattern and the actual landing will be divided into five phases: the base leg, the final approach, the roundout, the touchdown, and the after-landing roll. The base leg is that portion of the airport traffic pattern along which the airplane proceeds from the downwind leg to the final approach leg and begins the descent to a landing. While on the base leg, the pilot must accurately judge the distance in which the airplane must descend to the landing point and correct for wind drift so the ground track remains perpendicular to the extension of the centerline of the landing runway. The final approach is the last part of the traffic pattern during which the airplane is aligned with the landing runway or area, and a straight line descent is made to the point of touchdown. The descent rate, or descent angle, is governed by the airplane's height and distance from the intended touchdown point and the airplane's speed over the ground. The roundout, or flare as it is sometimes called, is that part of the final approach where the airplane makes a transition from the approach attitude to the touchdown or landing attitude. The touchdown is the actual contact or touching of the main wheels of the airplane on the landing surface as the full weight of the airplane is being transferred from the wings to the wheels. The after-landing roll, or rollout, is the forward roll of the airplane on the landing surface after touchdown while the airplane's momentum decelerates to a normal taxi speed or a stop. Normal approach and landing. This type of approach and landing involves the use of techniques for what is considered a normal situation. That is, when engine power is available, the wind is light or the final approach is made directly into the wind, the final approach path has no obstacles, and the landing surface is firm and of ample length to gradually bring the airplane to a stop. The selected landing point should be beyond the runway's approach threshold, but well within the first one-third portion of the runway. The factors involved and the techniques described for the normal approach and landing also have variable applications to the other than normal approaches and landings, which are discussed later in this chapter. This being the case, the principles of normal operations are explained first and must be understood before proceeding to the more complex operations. Base leg. The placement of the base leg is one of the more important judgments to be made by the pilot in any landing approach. The pilot must accurately judge the altitude and distance from which a gradual descent will result in landing at the desired spot. The distance will depend on the altitude of the base leg, the effect of wind, and amount of wing flaps used. When there is a strong wind on final approach, or the flaps will be used to produce a steep angle of descent, the base leg must be positioned closer to the approach end of the runway than would be required with a light wind or no flaps. Normally, the landing gear should be extended and the before landing check completed prior to reaching the base leg. After turning onto the base leg, the pilot should start the descent with reduced power and an airspeed of approximately 1.4 VSO. VSO is the stalling speed with power off, landing gear and flaps down. For example, if VSO is 60 knots, the speed should be 1.4 times 60 or 84 knots. Landing flaps may be partially lowered if desired at this time. Full flaps are not recommended until the final approach is established and the landing assured. Drift correction should be established and maintained to follow a ground track perpendicular to the extension of the centerline of the runway on which the landing is to be made. Since the final approach and landing will normally be made into the wind, there will be somewhat of a crosswind during the base leg. This requires that the airplane be angled or crabbed sufficiently into the wind to prevent drifting farther away from the intended landing spot. The base leg should be continued to the point where a medium to shallow banked turn will align the airplane's path directly with the center line of the landing runway. This descending turn should be completed at a safe altitude, which will be dependent upon the height of the terrain and any obstructions along the ground track. The turn to the final approach should also be sufficiently above the airport elevation to permit a final approach long enough for the pilot to accurately estimate the resultant point of touchdown while maintaining the proper approach airspeed. This will require careful planning as to the starting point and the radius of the turn. Normally, it is recommended that the angle of bank not exceed a medium bank because the steeper the angle of bank, the higher the airspeed at which the airplane stalls. Since the base to final turn is made at a relatively low altitude, it is vitally important that a stall not occur at this point. If an extremely steep bank is needed to prevent overshooting the proper final approach path, it is advisable to discontinue the approach, go around, and plan to start the turn earlier on the next approach rather than risk a hazardous situation. Final approach. Immediately after the base to final approach turn is completed, the longitudinal axis of the airplane should be aligned with the centerline of the runway or landing surface so that drift, if any, will be recognized immediately. On a normal approach with no wind drift, the longitudinal axis should be kept aligned with the runway centerline throughout the approach and landing. The proper way to correct for a crosswind will be explained under the section Crosswind Approach and Landing. For now, only an approach and landing where the wind is light or straight down the runway will be discussed. After aligning the airplane with the runway center line, the final flap setting should be completed and the pitch attitude adjusted as required for the desired rate of descent. Slight adjustments in pitch and power may be necessary to maintain the desired attitude and the desired approach airspeed. In the absence of the manufacturer's recommended airspeed, a speed equal to 1.3 VSO should be used. That is, if VSO is 60 knots, the speed should be 78 knots. When the pitch attitude and airspeed have been stabilized, the airplane should be retrimmed to relieve the pressures being held on the controls. The descent angle should be controlled throughout the approach so that the airplane will land in the center of the first third of the runway. The descent angle is affected by all four fundamental forces that act on an airplane: lift, drag, and thrust and weight. If all those forces are constant, the descent angle will be constant in a no-wind condition. The pilot can control those forces by adjusting 1. The airspeed, 2. The attitude, 3. The power, and 4. The drag, flaps or forward slip. The wind also plays a prominent part in the gliding distance over the ground. Naturally, the pilot has no control over the wind, but may correct for its effects on the airplane's descent by appropriate pitch and power adjustments. Considering the factors that affect the descent angle on the final approach, for all practical purposes, at a given pitch attitude, there is only one power setting for one airspeed, one flap setting, and one wind condition. A change in any one of these variables will require an appropriate coordinated change in the other controllable variables. For example, if the pitch attitude is raised too high without an increase of power, the airplane will settle very rapidly and touch down short of the desired spot. For this reason, never try to stretch a glide by applying back elevator pressure alone to reach the desired landing spot. This will shorten the gliding distance if power is not added simultaneously. Therefore, the proper angle of descent and airspeed should be maintained by coordinating pitch attitude changes and power changes. The objective of a good final approach is to descend at an angle and airspeed that will permit the airplane to reach the desired touchdown point at an airspeed which will result in a minimum of floating just before touchdown. To accomplish this, it is essential that both the descent angle and the airspeed be accurately controlled. Since on a normal approach, the power setting is not fixed as in a power-off approach, The power should be adjusted as necessary to control the airspeed, and the pitch attitude adjusted simultaneously to control the angle of descent or to attain desired altitudes along the approach path. By lowering the nose and reducing power to keep approach airspeed constant, a descent at a higher rate can be made to correct for being too high in the approach. This is one reason for performing approaches with partial power. If the approach is too high, merely lower the nose and reduce the power. When the approach is too low, add power and raise the nose. On the other hand, if the approach is extremely high or low, it is advisable to reject the landing and execute a go-around. This procedure is explained later in this chapter. The lift-drag factors may also be varied by the pilot to adjust the descent through the use of the landing flaps. When the flaps are lowered, the airspeed will decrease unless the power is increased or the pitch attitude lowered. After starting the final approach, the pilot must then estimate where the airplane will land through discerning judgment of the descent angle. If it appears that the airplane is going to overshoot or land slightly beyond the desired spot, more flaps may be used if not fully extended, or the power reduced further and the pitch attitude lowered. This will result in a steeper approach. If the spot is being undershot and a shallower approach is needed, the power and the pitch attitude should be increased to readjust the descent angle and the airspeed. Never retract the flaps to correct for undershooting, since that will suddenly decrease the lift and cause the airplane to sink even more rapidly. Generally, prior to the approach, the airplane will have been trimmed to a state of balance and equilibrium in level flight at cruising power and airspeed. However, during the approach to a landing, the power is at a considerably lower than cruise setting, and the airplane is flying at a relatively slow airspeed. It becomes apparent, then, that the airplane must be retrimmed on the final approach to compensate for the change in aerodynamic forces. With the reduced power and with a slower airspeed, the airflow produces less lift on the wings and less downward force on the horizontal stabilizer, resulting in a significant nose-down tendency. The elevator, then, must be trimmed more nose-up. As pointed out in the go-around procedure in this chapter and later in the elevator trim stall demonstration in Chapter 11, the pilot must be prepared to overpower this trim condition when the landing is rejected and a go-around is initiated. It will be found that the rollout, touchdown, and landing roll are much easier to accomplish when they are preceded by a proper final approach with precise control of airspeed, attitude, power, and drag, resulting in a stabilized descent angle. Estimating height and movement. During the approach, roundout, and touchdown, vision is of prime importance. To provide a wide scope of vision and to foster good judgment of height and movement, the pilot's head should assume a natural, straight-ahead position. The pilot's visual focus should not be fixed on any one side or any one spot ahead of the airplane, but should be changing slowly from a point just over the airplane's nose to the desired touchdown zone and back again while maintaining a deliberate awareness of distance from either side of the runway within the pilot's peripheral field of vision. Accurate estimation of distance is, besides being a matter of practice, dependent upon how clearly objects are seen. It requires that the vision be focused properly in order that the important objects stand out as clearly as possible. Speed, in particular, blurs objects at close range. Most everyone has noted this in an automobile moving at high speed. Nearby objects seem to merge together in a blur, while objects further away stand out clearly. The driver subconsciously focuses the eyes sufficiently far ahead of the automobile to see objects distinctly. Similarly, the distance at which the pilot's vision is focused should be proportionate to the speed at which the airplane is traveling over the ground. Thus, as speed is reduced during the roundout, the distance ahead of the airplane at which it is possible to focus should be brought closer accordingly. If the pilot attempts to focus on references that are too close or looks directly down, the references become blurred and reactions will either be too abrupt or too late. In this case, the pilot's tendency will be to over-control, round out high, and make full stall drop-in landings. When the pilot focuses too far ahead, accuracy in judging the closeness of the ground is lost, and the consequent reactions will be slow, since there will appear to be no necessity for any action, resulting in the airplane flying into the ground nose first. The change of visual focus from a long distance to a short distance requires a definite time interval, and even though the time is brief, the airplane's speed during this interval is such that the airplane travels an appreciable distance both forward and downward toward the ground. If the focus is changed gradually, being brought progressively closer as speed is reduced, the time interval and the attendant pilot reactions will be reduced and the whole landing process smoothed out. Roundout or flare. The roundout is a slow, smooth transition from a normal approach attitude to a landing attitude. When the airplane in a normal descent approaches within what appears to be about 10 to 20 feet above the ground, the roundout or flare should be started, and once started, should be a continuous process until the airplane touches down on the ground. As the airplane reaches a height above the ground where a timely change can be made into the proper landing attitude, back elevator pressure should be gradually applied to slowly increase the pitch attitude and angle of attack. This will cause the airplane's nose to gradually rise toward the desired landing attitude. The angle of attack should be increased at a rate that will allow the airplane to continue settling slowly as forward speed decreases. When the angle of attack is increased, the lift is momentarily increased, thereby decreasing the rate of descent. Since power is normally reduced to idle during the roundout, the airspeed will also gradually decrease. This in turn causes lift to decrease again. It must be controlled by raising the nose and further increasing the angle of attack. During the roundout, then, the airspeed is being decreased to touchdown speed while the lift is being controlled, so the airplane will settle gently onto the landing surface. The roundout should be executed at a rate that the proper landing attitude and the proper touchdown airspeed are attained simultaneously, just as the wheels contact the landing surface. The rate at which the roundout is executed depends on the airplane's height above the ground, the rate of descent, and the pitch attitude. A roundout started excessively high must be executed more slowly than one at a lower height to allow the airplane to descend to the ground while the proper landing attitude is being established. The rate of rounding out must also be proportionate to the rate of closure with the ground. That is, when the airplane appears to be descending very slowly, the increase in pitch attitude must be made at a correspondingly slow rate. The pitch attitude of the airplane in a full-flap approach is considerably lower than in a no-flap approach. Therefore, to attain the proper landing attitude before touching down, the nose must travel through a greater pitch change when flaps are fully extended. Since the roundout is usually started at approximately the same height above the ground regardless of the degree of flaps used, the pitch attitude must be increased at a faster rate when full flaps are used. However, the roundout should still be executed at a rate proportionate to the airplane's downward motion. Once the actual process of rounding out is started, the elevator control should not be pushed forward. If too much back pressure has been exerted, this pressure should be either slightly relaxed or held constant, depending on the degree of the error. In some cases, it may be necessary to advance the throttle slightly to prevent an excessive rate of sink or a stall, all of which would result in a hard drop-in landing. It is recommended, therefore, that the pilot form the habit of keeping one hand on the throttle throughout the approach and landing should a sudden and unexpected hazardous situation require an immediate application of power. Well before starting the roundout, it is imperative that the pilot recheck the landing gear for the down and locked indications and place the propeller control in high RPM position if the airplane is so equipped. Touchdown. The touchdown is the gentle settling of the airplane onto the landing surface. The roundout and touchdown should be made with the engine idling and the airplane at minimum controllable airspeed, so that the airplane will touch down on the main gear at approximately stalling speed. As the airplane settles, the proper landing attitude must be applied by application of whatever back elevator pressure is necessary. Some pilots may try to force or fly the airplane onto the ground without establishing the proper landing attitude. It is paradoxical that the way to make an ideal landing is to try to hold the airplane's wheels a few inches off the ground as long as possible with the elevators. In most cases, when the wheels are within about 2 or 3 feet of the ground, the airplane will still be settling too fast for a gentle touchdown. Therefore, this descent must be retarded by further back pressure on the elevators. Since the airplane is already close to its stalling speed and is settling, this added back pressure will only slow up the settling instead of stopping it. At the same time, though, it will result in the airplane touching the ground in the proper landing attitude. Nose wheel type airplanes should contact the ground in a tail low attitude with the main wheels touching down first so that little or no weight is on the nose wheel. In tail wheel type airplanes, the round out and touchdown should be timed so that the wheels of the main landing gear and tail wheel touch down simultaneously, or 3-point landing. This requires fine timing, technique, and judgment of distance and altitude. In nose wheel type airplanes, after the main wheels make initial contact with the ground, back pressure on the elevator control should be held to maintain a positive angle of attack for aerodynamic braking and to hold the nose wheel off the ground until the airplane decelerates. As the airplane's momentum decreases, back pressure may be gradually relaxed to allow the nose wheel to gently settle onto the runway. This will permit prompt steering with the nose wheel if it is of the steerable type. At the same time, it will cause a low angle of attack and negative lift on the wings to prevent floating or skipping and will allow the full weight of the airplane to rest on the wheels for better braking action. The airplane should never be flown on the runway with excess speed. When the wheels of tailwheel type airplanes make contact with the ground, the elevator controls should be carefully eased fully back to hold the tail down and the tailwheel on the ground. This provides more positive directional control of the airplane equipped with a steerable tailwheel and prevents any tendency for the airplane to nose over. If the tailwheel is not on the ground, easing back on the elevator control may cause the airplane to become airborne again because the change in attitude will increase the angle of attack and produce enough lift for the airplane to fly. It is extremely important that in either type of airplane, the touchdown occur with the airplane's longitudinal axis exactly parallel to the direction in which the airplane is moving along the runway. Failure to accomplish this not only imposes severe side loads on the landing gear, but imparts ground looping or swerving tendencies, particularly to tailwheel type airplanes. To avoid these side stresses or a ground loop, then, the pilot must never allow the airplane to touch down while in a crab or while drifting. Slips. A slip is a descent with one wing lowered and the airplane's longitudinal axis at an angle to the flight path. It may be used for either of two purposes, or both of them combined. A slip may be used to steepen the approach path without increasing the airspeed, as would be the case if a dive were used. It can also be used to make the airplane move sideways through the air to counteract the drift which results from a crosswind. Formerly, slips were used as a normal means of controlling landing descents to short or obstructed fields, but they are now primarily used in the performance of crosswind landings and emergency landings. With the installation of wing flaps on modern airplanes, the use of slips to steepen or control the angle of descent is no longer a common procedure. However, the pilot still needs skill in performance of forward slips to correct for possible errors in judgment of the landing approach. The primary purpose of forward slips is to dissipate altitude without increasing the airplane's speed, particularly in airplanes not equipped with flaps. There are many circumstances requiring the use of forward slips, such as in a landing approach over obstacles, and in making forced landings when it is always wise to allow an extra margin of altitude for safety in the original estimate of the approach. In the latter case, if the inaccuracy of the approach is confirmed by excess altitude when nearing the boundary of the selected field, the excess can be dissipated by slipping. The use of slips has definite limitations. Some pilots may try to lose altitude by violent slipping rather than by smoothly maneuvering and exercising good judgment and using only a slight or moderate slip. In emergency landings, this erratic practice invariably will lead to trouble since enough excess speed may result to prevent touching down anywhere near the proper point and very often will result in overshooting the entire field. The forward slip is a slip in which the airplane's direction of motion continues the same as before the slip was begun. If there is any crosswind, the slip will be much more effective if made toward the wind. Slipping should usually be done with the engine idling. There is little logic in slipping to lose altitude if power is being used. Assuming that the airplane is originally in straight flight, the wing on the side toward which the slip is to be made should be lowered by use of the ailerons. Simultaneously, the airplane's nose must be yawed in the opposite direction by applying opposite rudder so that the airplane's longitudinal axis is at an angle to its original flight path. The degree to which the nose is yawed in the opposite direction from the bank should be such that the original ground track is maintained. The nose should also be raised as necessary to prevent the airspeed from increasing. If a slip is used during the last portion of a final approach, the longitudinal axis of the airplane must be aligned with the runway just prior to touchdown, so that the airplane will touch down headed in the direction in which it is moving over the runway. This requires timely action to discontinue the slip and align the airplane's longitudinal axis with its direction of travel over the ground at the instant of touchdown. Failure to accomplish this imposes severe side loads on the landing gear and imparts violent ground looping tendencies. Discontinuing the slip is accomplished by leveling the wings and simultaneously releasing the rudder pressure while readjusting the pitch attitude to the normal glide attitude. If the pressure on the rudder is released abruptly, the nose will swing too quickly into line and the airplane will tend to acquire excess speed. Because of the location of the pitot tube and static vents, airspeed indicators in some airplanes may have considerable error when the airplane is in a slip. The pilot must be aware of this possibility and recognize a properly performed slip by the attitude of the airplane, the sound of the airflow, and the feel of the flight controls. Note, forward slips with wing flaps extended should not be done in airplanes wherein the manufacturer's operating instructions prohibit such operation. A side slip, as distinguished from a forward slip, is one during which the airplane's longitudinal axis remains parallel to the original flight path, but in which the flight path changes direction according to the steepness of the bank. The side slip is important in counteracting wind drift during crosswind landings and is discussed in a later section. Go-arounds, or rejected landings. Occasionally, it may be advisable, for safety reasons, to discontinue the landing approach and make another approach under more favorable conditions. Extremely low base-to-final turns, overshot or low final approaches, the unexpected appearance of hazards on the runway, wake turbulence from a preceding airplane, or overtaking another airplane on the approach are hazardous conditions that would demand a go-around. Although the need to discontinue a landing may arise at any point in the landing process, the most critical go-around will usually be one started when very close to the ground. Nevertheless, it is safer to make a go-around than to touch down while drifting or while in a crab, or to make a hard drop-in landing from a high roundout or bounced landing. Regardless of the height above the ground at which it is begun, a safe go-around may be accomplished if an early decision is made, a sound plan is followed, and the procedure is performed properly. The earlier a dangerous situation is recognized and the sooner the landing is rejected and the go-around started, the safer the procedure will be. The pilot should never wait until the last moment to make the decision. When the decision is made to discontinue an approach and perform a go-around, takeoff power should be applied immediately and the airplane's pitch attitude changed so as to slow or stop the descent. After the descent has been stopped, the landing flaps may be partially retracted or placed in the takeoff position as recommended by the manufacturer. Caution must be used, however, in retracting the flaps. Depending on the airplane's attitude and airspeed, it may be wise to retract the flaps intermittently in small increments to allow time for the airplane to accelerate progressively as they are being raised. A sudden and complete retraction of the flaps at a very low airspeed could cause a loss of lift resulting in the airplane settling onto the ground. Unless otherwise specified in the airplane's operating manual, it is generally recommended that the flaps be retracted, at least partially, before retracting the landing gear, for two reasons. First, on most airplanes, full flaps produce more drag than the landing gear, and second, in case the airplane should inadvertently touch down as the go-around is initiated, it is most desirable to have the landing gear in the down and locked position. When takeoff power is applied, it will usually be necessary to hold considerable pressure on the controls to maintain straight flight and a safe climb attitude. Since the airplane has been trimmed for the approach, a low power and airspeed condition, the nose will tend to rise sharply and veer to the left unless firm control pressures are applied. Forward elevator pressure must be applied to hold the nose in a safe climbing attitude. Right rudder pressure must be increased to counteract torque, or P factor, and to keep the nose straight. The airplane must be held in the proper flight attitude regardless of the amount of control pressure that is required. Frequently, this pressure is quite strong. While holding the airplane straight and in a safe climbing attitude, the pilot should retrim the airplane to relieve at least the heavy control pressures. Since the airspeed will build up rapidly with the application of takeoff power and the controls will become more effective, this initial trim is to relieve the heavy pressures until a more precise trim can be made for the lighter pressures. It is advisable to retract the landing gear only after the initial or rough trim has been accomplished and when it is certain the airplane will remain airborne. During the initial part of an extremely low go-around, the airplane may mush onto the runway and bounce. This situation is not particularly dangerous if the airplane is kept straight and a constant, safe pitch attitude maintained. The airplane will be approaching safe flying speed rapidly, and the advanced power will cushion any secondary touchdown. If the pitch attitude is increased excessively in an effort to prevent the airplane from mushing onto the runway, it may cause the airplane to stall. This would be especially likely if no trim correction is made and the flaps remained fully extended. Never attempt to retract the landing gear until after a rough trim is accomplished and a positive rate of climb is established or the descent stopped. After a positive rate of climb is established and the landing gear is retracted, the airplane should be allowed to accelerate to the best rate of climb speed, or VY, before the final flap retraction is accomplished. From this point on, the procedure is identical with that for a normal climb after takeoff. After landing roll. The landing process must never be considered complete until the airplane decelerates to the normal taxi speed during the landing roll, or has been brought to a complete stop when clear of the landing area. Many accidents have occurred as a result of pilots abandoning their vigilance and positive control after getting the airplane on the ground. The pilot must be alert for directional control difficulties immediately upon and after touchdown due to the ground friction on the wheels. The friction creates a pivot point on which a moment arm can act. This is especially true in tailwheel-type airplanes because, unlike nosewheel-type airplanes, the center of gravity is behind the main wheels. Any difference between the direction the tailwheel-type airplane is traveling and the direction it is headed will produce a moment about the pivot point of the wheels, and the airplane will tend to swerve. Nosewheel-type airplanes make the task of directional control much easier because the center of gravity, being ahead of the main landing wheels, presents a moment arm which tends to straighten the airplane's path during the touchdown and after landing roll. However, this should not lull the pilot into a false sense of security. Loss of directional control may lead to an aggravated, uncontrolled, tight turn on the ground or a ground loop. The combination of centrifugal force acting on the CG and ground friction of the main wheels resisting it during the ground loop may cause the airplane to tip or lean enough for the outside wingtip to contact the ground and may even impose a sideward force which could collapse the landing gear. Tailwheel-type airplanes are most susceptible to ground loops late in the after-landing roll because rudder effectiveness decreases with the decreasing flow of air along the rudder surface as the airplane slows. The rudder serves the same purpose on the ground as it does in the air. It controls the yawing of the airplane. The effectiveness of the rudder, however, is dependent on the airflow, which of course depends on the speed of the airplane. As the speed decreases and the nose wheel or tail wheel has been lowered to the ground, the steerable nose or tail wheel provides more positive directional control. The brakes of an airplane serve the same primary purpose as do the brakes of an automobile, that is, to reduce speed on the ground. In airplanes, however, they may also be used as an aid in directional control when more positive control is required than could be obtained with rudder, nose wheel steering, or tail wheel steering alone. To use brakes, the pilot should slide the toes or feet up from the rudder pedals to the brake pedals. If rudder pressure is being held at the time braking action is needed, that pressure should not be released as the feet or toes are being slid up to the brake pedals because control may be lost before brakes can be applied. During the ground roll, the airplane's direction of movement may be changed by carefully applying pressure on the brake or uneven pressures on each brake in the desired direction. Caution must be exercised, however, when applying brakes to avoid over-controlling. The ailerons, too, serve the same purpose on the ground as they do in the air. They change the lift and drag components of the wings. During the after-landing roll, they should be used to keep the wings level in much the same way they were used in flight. If a wing starts to rise, aileron control should be applied toward that wing to lower it. The amount required will depend on speed, because as the forward speed of the airplane decreases, the ailerons will become less effective. Techniques for using ailerons in crosswind conditions are explained further in the section on crosswind landings. After a nosewheel-type airplane is on the ground, back pressure on the elevator control may be gradually relaxed to place normal weight on the nose wheel to aid in better steering. With a tailwheel-type airplane, the elevator control should be held back as far as possible and as firmly as possible until the airplane stops. This provides more positive control with tailwheel steering, tends to shorten the after-landing roll, and prevents bouncing and skipping. If available runway permits, the speed of the airplane should be allowed to dissipate in a normal manner by the friction and drag of the wheels on the ground. Brakes may be used if needed to help slow the airplane. After the airplane has been slowed sufficiently and has been turned onto a taxiway or clear of the landing area, it should be brought to a complete stop. Only after this is done should the pilot retract the flaps and clean up the airplane. Too many accidents have occurred as a result of the pilot unintentionally operating the landing gear control and retracting the gear instead of the flap control when the airplane was still rolling. The habit of positively identifying either of these controls before actuating them should be formed from the very beginning of flight training and continued in all future flying activities. Crosswind approach and landing. Many runways or landing areas are such that landings must be made while the wind is blowing across rather than parallel to the landing direction. Therefore, all pilots should be prepared to cope with these situations when they arise. The same basic principles and factors involved in a normal approach and landing apply to a crosswind approach and landing. Therefore, only the additional techniques required for correcting wind drift are discussed here. Crosswind landings are a little more difficult to perform than are crosswind takeoffs, mainly due to different problems involved in maintaining accurate control of the airplane while its speed is decreasing rather than increasing as on takeoff. There are two usual methods of accomplishing a crosswind approach and landing: the crab method and the wing low method. Although the crab method may be easier for the pilot to maintain during final approach, it requires a high degree of judgment and timing in removing the crab immediately prior to touchdown. The wing low method is recommended in most cases, although a combination of both methods may be used.